By Women for America First. Yes, Matt Gaetz spoke to a group of women. The subject of that speech, anyone need a ride home from band practice? During the speech, Gaetz described himself as a champion of women. Yes, he's a champion of women, but he thinks it's like golf. The lower the number, the better. Because it was a speech to women, Gaetz quoted one.
I take the words of Margaret Thatcher to heart. If you want something said, get a man. If you want something done, hire a woman.
Matt, I'm pretty sure hiring a woman is what you're in trouble for. Gaetz emphasized that no matter how much damning evidence he personally provides authorities, he's not going anywhere.
So let me assure you, I have not yet begun to fight. For the country I love and for the nation that I know benefits from America First principles.
I have not yet begun to fight for the country I love may not be the best thing to say if you've held public office for 10 years. I've worked at this Subway for 10 years, and let me assure you, I have not yet begun to make a sandwich. He even took time to thank people who stood by him.
This past week has been full of encouragement. From President Trump, Marjorie Taylor Greene, and Jim Jordan, to the MAGA nation that shares so much love.
Not exactly faultless character witnesses. Your Honor, to defend my client, I call to the stand a serial sexual assaulter, a man accused of covering up sexual abuse, and a lady who believes wildfires are caused by Yiddish photon torpedoes.
Gaetz also mistakenly thought his sex crime investigation would bring him closer to a trailblazer in the genre. Gaetz tried to schedule a visit with Trump after it was first revealed that he was being investigated, but the request was rejected by aides close to the former president, who have urged Trump not to stick his neck out to defend Gaetz. Trump, of course, refusing to consort with someone caught committing sex crimes before being able to brag about them to Billy Bush.
So Trump's dodging Gaetz after Gaetz spent years parroting Trump's most unhinged lies. The next thing you know, Trump's going to start acting like he doesn't even know Matt Gaetz's name.
It was Trump's fault. It's always Trump's fault. Can it ever be like Rick Gaetz's fault? I mean, it's always Trump's fault, Rick. Every single guy, even if they hated me, they'd all contribute. But, Rick, you understand it. I don't want to make those calls.
In fairness, he definitely looks more like a Rick than a Matt. Although I'm guessing Trump just calls everyone Rick if he forgets their name. I mean, he lives in Florida, so it probably works about 60% of the time. Trump's not the only Republican apparently turning his back on Gaetz. Conservatives in general, including Gaetz's buddies on Fox News, which has hosted Gaetz more than 300 times since the summer of 2017, have suddenly gone quiet. Although part of that may be due to the fact that even though he's on TV all the damn time, nobody seems to like him much.
Another day, and yet very little response from his fellow Republicans.
Right. Well, it's an open secret that he's not well-liked among Republicans.
He has no one in Congress, almost no one, who really wants to stand with him right now. He has very few defenders.
Gaetz's own aides would regularly send embarrassing videos of their boss to other GOP operatives, meaning they didn't even like the guy.
Gaetz was never particularly popular among his House Republican colleagues.
Gaetz wasn't the only disgraced Republican at a Florida golf resort this weekend. The AP wrote an article on the former POTUS's waning influence, and they noted that on late night TV, some have tried to scrub him out entirely, with Late Show host Stephen Colbert refusing to say his name. Okay, you got me. Guilty as noticed. But for the record, I'm not trying to scrub him out. It's just that legend has it, now that he's out of office, if you say his name three times, he appears in your bathroom mirror and then uses your toilet while complaining that it's low flush.
The name game. Shirley. Shirley, Shirley, Bo Burley, Bonana, Banana, Bo Burley, Be Fine, Mo Merrily. Shirley.
After the whole January 6th thing? No, even before that. It was after November 6th when he did that whole I won thing. I plan not to say the guy's name again. I think I've paid my dues in that regard. But now that the buzzkills over at the AP have mentioned it, it's no fun anymore. Besides, it's really hard coming up with synonyms for this douche nozzle's name. Have we used douche nozzle?
I don't think so.
We don't have used douche nozzle? Well, now I use douche nozzle. Now I can't use douche nozzle. Usually I call him the former president, but that gives him dignity. And me flashbacks. I've also calling him 45 because he's the 45th president, but now he's rebranding himself as 45.
Come on, everybody. I say now let's play a game. I bet you I could make a rhyme. treated like it wasn't there. But a B or an F or an M will appear. And then I say Bo had a B. Then I say the name, then banana, banner, and a foe. And then I say the name again with an F. Third plane, then a B, fry, and a mo. And then I say the name again with an M this time. And there isn't any name that I can't rhyme.
Also, I'm looking for a reliable substitute for his name. Maybe I should just call him, you know, Melania's husband or Jeff Epstein's dance partner or something really insulting like Don Jr.'s father. But I have to call him something. Hopefully someday the defendant. But until then, what should I call the old president when there's a story about him? He who shall be named. I will say the most original and appropriate names on the air up to a point. They're not going to let me call him a piece of...
Thanks for the songs this week from Husker Du, AC/DC, The Replacements, Bruce Springsteen, and Shirley Ellis. And thanks to Stuart Reynolds, Kenan Thompson, Kate McKinnon, Alex Moffat, Chris Redd, Egon Wadim, Tuning Out the News, Tucker Carlson, Stephen Colbert, John Thibodeau, Seth Meyers, Matt Gaetz, Jimmy Kimmel, and Donald Trump.
The preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.
Yeah, for some reason or another, you sound a little taller on radio.
Thank you, Mrs. Wagner, for joining us on another segment of Reclaiming History.
You're primarily responsible for the Education Committee.
Yes, for all of our outreach. A lot of it had to do with teachers, to train teachers in astronomy, which was a lot of fun to do. We ran a 1 week institute, 8 hours a day. We brought in various types of lecturers. There was all sorts of activities that the teachers went through. And so it's always good if you're going to do an activity or a laboratory in classroom to experience it yourself to see what types of issues come up. And therefore, when you actually are teaching it in a classroom, it goes much more smoothly. So, as I said, we did that for 5 years, and actually it was continued during the summer with our last astronomer at Dudley, too. And I came in to just talk a little bit about the pedagogy that would be useful in teaching astronomy.
So how long have you been with Dudley Observatory?
Oh, I was trying to think how long have I been. I think I joined the Dudley in 2006. I was actually brought there by the president of Dudley because I also run a regional international science and engineering fair. And the late Sam Waite from RPI was president then of the Dudley Observatory. And so I knew him through RPI. And he asked me to join the organization and bring in my education background, since they do a lot of that's the main focus of Dudley. It used to be for research, but now it's really an astronomy outreach organization.
So for someone who's been around that long, you must do it because you love it. I can't imagine you'd stay doing what you do if you didn't really love it.
I love science education. I'm involved in various aspects. I taught science for 34 years.
Science teacher.
So I was in the classroom a long time. I taught actually on Long Island, Freeport High School for a while. And then when we moved upstate, I taught at Burn Hills, Ballston Lake, both the high school and the middle school. And then I even taught a summer course for talented students, actually, in DNA science and technology at the University at Albany. So the astronomy part was I was actually brought in because not of my great background in astronomy, because of my education background.
So you used one of those educational words earlier, pedagogy.
Yes.
What exactly does that mean to us laymen, non-educational folks?
There's strategies in how to engage students in teaching to get kids excited about learning. Mm-hmm. So there's all sorts of different strategies that are effective, certainly, for example, when you're doing projects, because there's different learning styles for students. You give them different ways to be successful. Some might be artists. So, for example, when we were studying atomic structure, some kids made mobiles. Some kids wrote reports about atoms. Some kids even wrote poetry about atoms. Different ways in which they can use their own talents and still be successful in the classroom. So pedagogy is different ways of encouraging students to learn science, different ways of presenting material. For example, when I was teaching at Burn Hills, I taught a number of different sciences. So when I taught physics, chemistry, physical science for middle school, I used to run a magic show. And I do all sorts of demonstrations. And I never tell them why something happened, but they became very inquisitive about what is going on. And through that, then I bring out the demonstrations I did when I actually was going to teach topic related to the demonstrations. I bring out the demonstration again, and the students will say, oh, I remember the drinking bird, for example. And so they finally figured out how it actually works, that it wasn't really magic, it was science.
Great. So to my listeners, if you're just tuning in, this is another segment of Reclaiming History with Livonia Mallory, airing on WOOC 105.3 FM, the Sanctuary for Independent Media. And I have Ms. Wagner on the line with me. Being an experienced teacher, she works at the Dudley Observatory. So Ms. Wagner, when you think about all of the great work that Dudley does every day, day after day, What are you most proud of?
I think the programs that we're able to present to the public, particularly our last astronomer, Valerie Rapson, did a wonderful job of outreach. So we have the Rising Star program for students where they are given telescopes and they learn how to use the telescopes and obviously learn how to navigate the night sky, sort of like a map info type of way of doing things, learning. It's a GPS of the night sky, learning where bodies are located, stars and planets, and sometimes you even see a meteor shower, which is exciting.
One of the reasons I wanted to talk to you folks over at the Dudley was because there are so many women involved in the Dudley Observatory, so many women at every level. Do you think that that makes a difference when you have so many women involved in science?
Oh, absolutely. The research has shown that children learn best when people are more similar to them. And that not only goes for the sex of the person, but even the ethnic or racial groups of people, they learn better when people are more like them. And so girls, you set by example. For example, when I was teaching biology and we were doing some dissections and the kids go, ooh, disgusting, when they see frogs and formaldehyde or formalin, what's what we actually use. Formaldehyde was considered pretty bad, although formalin's not all that great either. And I'd stick my hands in and grab out a frog and they go, oh, she did it. So maybe I can. Or I used to keep a lot of live animals in the classroom. I'd pick up a snake and they go, I had a Bessie, our boa constrictor. And the kids got used to hanging out with Bessie. She'd wrap around their necks and or on their waist, and they weren't afraid of these animals. And snakes are not slimy, as some people always thought. So just seeing a woman in that role, and certainly because of the number of years and how old I am at this point, when I was in school, a lot of women were not majoring in science. And because my background's more in biology, I took a lot of pre-med courses. And of course, my courses back then were mostly men. And I was often the subject of lots of pranks, particularly in a laboratory, because I was often one or two girls that were in that particular laboratory. So we've come a long way. Actually, women, there's more women applying to medical school now than men or in medical school at this point. However, the areas of astronomy and physics, there are still less women that are in there. And actually, the whole history of Dudley, if you go into it, everybody who's seen the movie Hidden Figures about these women who did all the math for NASA. Well, the same thing was true with observatories. The Harvard Observatory and the Dudley Observatory employed what they called computers. But the computers were women, and they were paid just about nothing. They were often the wives or children or relatives or close friends, and they would do the work where they'd have these glass slides of the night sky that were taken by the men, and they were asked to do all the measurements, and they would measure distances. But a lot of these women began to even classify stars. They really advanced astronomy tremendously and were never really recognized for their work. So the term computers actually goes back to the women who were actually doing all the computing before, and then they became the programmers for the computers, still doing the tedious work.
Well, Ms. Wagner, we are so grateful that you joined us on another segment of Reclaiming History. To my listeners, give them your name and your title and responsibility over at the Dudley.
My name is Joan Wagner. I chair the Science Education Committee, and I also am the secretary, so I get to take all the notes during our board meetings.
Excellent. Ms. Wagner, is there anything else that we haven't had a chance to talk about that you want to make sure that we share and discuss with my listeners?
Well, a number of times a month, we do have an outside meeting at the Octagon Barn. A lot of the students who are in the Rising Star program bring their telescopes, and a lot of local people get to view the night sky. So it's very exciting. And they often bring a lecturer there, too. So right now, it's been virtual.
And what day of the week does the Octagon Barn occur?
It usually takes place on a Friday night.
And at what time, approximately?
Sundown.
Okay. So that's Friday evening, sundown, at the Octagon Barn. Ms. Joan Wagner, thank you for joining me on another segment of Reclaiming History with Livonia Mallory.
Now to absorb some local color through the magic of AM radio.
The book of Revelations tells us to watch for the seven signs of evil.
Sign of evil number 4.
Continuing our sign of evil countdown, here's Vanessa Williams.
The spring peeper is a chorus frog, widespread throughout the eastern United States and named for their chirping call that marks the beginning of spring. If you've had your ears open outside lately in these parts, you've heard spring peepers who are out in full force. Here's a recording of the spring peepers from the Wave Farm Test Site for Acoustic Commons web stream that you can listen to 24 hours a day at wavefarm.org. Click on the listen button at wgxc.org or wavefarm.org to listen to the open mic in the woods at Wave Farm. And these days you'll hear some of these spring peepers.
You gotta try something.
I got a job at the radio station.
Oh, great. That place. It's dark and dirty and has, like, what, those three weirdos who work there?
Next is 2021 new music from Stereolab. The song is called Dimension M2. We'll be right back.
Where do you see? Oh, you want to start? John.
Hi, this is John Doe.
Oh, hi, this is Jill Sobiel.
And you're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Acre, Catskill, Hudson. Listener-supported hands-on radio for Greene and Columbia counties. Chaka!
And no Keisha.
Saturday, May 1st, tune in the 8th annual Reveille broadcast on WGXC. It's 25 hours following the sunrise around the earth and listening to the dawn chorus at places throughout the world. The broadcast starts at midnight Eastern time, starting in London, heading across the Atlantic and picking up sounds from Wave Farm in the 5 a.m. hour. Then you hear daybreak across the United States, across the Pacific Ocean, into Asia, Africa, Europe, and back in London at midnight. Tune in all day, May 1st, from midnight to midnight, to Reveille on the radio at WGXC.org and go to soundtent.org for more information about this broadcast.
The sound you hear is a recording of the warning siren in case of an imminent nuclear attack.
If this was an actual attack warning, would you be prepared?
Would your family be prepared?
If not, see a Survive All Civil Defense approved steel and concrete basement type fallout shelter.
The shelter, along with a basic equipment kit, affords you and your family maximum protection.
Survive All shelters are FHA approved.
No money down. 5 years to pay.
Horrible though it may be, this sound may someday become a reality.
Be prepared. See a survival shelter today.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Max Hamill of Red Hook, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
You are tuned to 90.7 FM. WGXC. Grabbable, handleable, listener-fueled radio for Greene and Columbia counties.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. I'm Philip Grant. Stacey Sherman is reporting for Bloomberg that Governor Andrew M. Cuomo signed a bill April 16th requiring all internet service providers in New York to provide affordable high-speed access for low-income families. Cuomo said during a briefing Friday at the Northland Workforce Training Center in Buffalo, providers can charge those families no more than $15 a month. Eric Schmidt, the former CEO of Alphabet Incorporated, joined Cuomo for the bill signing. Schmidt chairs a 15-member state commission focused on using technology to help the state reopen better than it was before the virus. It was also announced that an emergency fund from Schmidt Futures and the Ford Foundation will provide free internet access to 50,000 students statewide during the 2021-22 school year. The bill passed by the state legislature caps a basic broadband plan at $15 a month and a higher speed plan at $20. Currently, a basic high-speed plan costs on average more than $50 a month. Schmidt said universal broadband access is the first and most important priority of the commission. He said, and I quote, "Internet is no longer optional," end quote. He added, and I quote, "Think of the generation that we could be creating that are not learning because we didn't give them internet access," end quote. Read the full story at Yahoo Finance. Aaliyah Schneider is reporting for Columbia Green Media. Ghent resident Christopher Cornell and Hudson Second Ward Supervisor Abdus Maya, the local Working Families Party candidates in Columbia County Court. Both men are represented by John Ciampoli of counsel with Messina, Perello, and Hill of Sayville, Suffolk County. They claim official party signatures on the certificate of authorization for working families candidates clipped from other documents and are therefore not genuine signatures. Ciampoli filed a petition against Ghent Town Board candidates Mallory Moore, Lori Johnson, and Carl Quinn, and 2nd Ward Alderwoman Tiffany Garagia. Garagia is looking to unseat Meyer as 2nd Ward Supervisor. Columbia County Board of Elections Democratic Commissioner Kenneth Dow said there is no indication that Cornell is running for office. Dow called the case total nonsense because a signature by law can be presented in a number of ways. He said, and I quote, "There is a lot of stuff that is in the law that indicates this is perfectly permissible, so that's why I think this is really nonsense," end quote. There is a statewide coordinated attempt by the Republican Party to knock people off the Working Families Party line, and information has been fabricated by people willfully ignoring the law, Dow said. Ciampoli argues that an original document with original signatures must be filed with the County Board of Elections, and Working Families failed to do so. Dow said the focus on candidates Mort, Johnson, Quinn, and Garagia are based on where the petitioners Cornell and Meyer can vote. Meyer did not challenge any Hudson candidates on the ballot other than Garagia. However, the outcome of the case would impact if the almost 30 Working Families Party candidates can be listed on the party's ballot line because they are all on the same disputed certificate of authorization, Dow said. Meyer said this week he challenged the Board of Elections specifically against Garagia. Meyer said he has not yet received a decision from the board and only took action through the Board of Elections, not in court. Meyer denied any connection to Cornell. And you can read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. Mid-Hudson News reports that on April 14th, Ulster County Executive Pat Ryan signed an executive order as part of his county's version of a, and I quote, Green New Deal, end quote. The measure mandates any construction of renewable or green energy infrastructure projects must hire local unions and local private contractors and pay a prevailing wage. Ryan said, and I quote, "To me, the core part of the Green New Deal is creating good-paying union jobs as we do that work to protect our environment, to transition to clean energy, and really to rebuild our infrastructure coming out of a once-in-a-century pandemic," end quote. He added, and I quote, "Today, Ulster County is going to continue to lead in both protecting our environment and making sure we're doing right by our working people and especially our partners in the building trades," end quote. The new law will be used on an upcoming solar project the county is building on a landfill. Todd Dorio, the president of the Hudson Valley Building and Constructing Trade Council, said, and I quote, "Evidence shows that higher wages due to prevailing wage does not slow the demand to build solar projects. Only 6 to 11% of total project cost on solar projects are wages. A 50% in labor costs would only increase the project cost by 3 to 5%. So on a $10 million solar project that we have maybe $300,000 would ensure good wages," end quote. Read more about this story at MidHudsonNews.com. Porcupine Soup is reporting an online free service that has been established to provide information on available locations that offer COVID-19 vaccinations, including many in Greene and Columbia counties. VaccineFinder.org is a search tool that allows users to enter a zip code and distance range and to select the brand of vaccine preferred. A list of locations that offer the vaccine appears, including information on if the shots are currently in stock. The website is operated by epidemiologists and software developers at Boston Children's Hospital and supported by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. It is updated daily. Appointments cannot be made through Vaccine Finder and must be made directly at the location offering the vaccine. Appointments are required at most locations. The Greene County list of sites includes Greene County Public Health, Kelly's Pharmacy in Greenville and Coxsackie, CVS in Cairo, Hannah Ford in Cairo, Walgreens in Greenville and Catskill, Price Chopper in Catskill, Walmart in Catskill, Wyndham Pharmacy and Wellness RX in Tannersville. As of April 15th, approximately 45% of Greene County's adult population had received at least one dose of the vaccine, and 29% have been fully vaccinated. Read the full story at porcupinesoup.com. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, community information, or COVID-19 updates, visit our website at WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
German measles, Russian flu, Montezuma's revenge. And why do we say a foreign word whenever someone sneezes? Tomorrow, I'll take a look at swine flu up close and personal. This is Les Nesbitt.
Will Biden end the U.S. forever war in Afghanistan? I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. President Biden announced a complete troop withdrawal from what he called the forever war in Afghanistan by September 11th.
Only the Afghans have the right and responsibility to lead their country.
President Biden speaking from the treaty room, the same room in the White House where President George W. Bush announced the U.S. invasion of Afghanistan in October 2001. In the two decades since, over 100,000 Afghan civilians have been killed, along with 45,000 members of the Afghan army and police, and at least 3,500 U.S. and coalition troops. Zahir Wahab knows well the impact of the invasion and occupation on his home country of Afghanistan. Wahab, a professor of education for decades, splits his time between the U.S. and Afghanistan. Since the 2001 invasion, he's been helping rebuild Afghanistan's shattered education system.
This invasion and occupation and the bloodshed have destroyed the country, its economy, its institutions, its infrastructure, its education, its way of life, relationships among the different ethnic groups. This occupation has been nothing short of a catastrophe.
Professor Wahab was speaking on the Democracy Now! NewsHour.
The United States and its allies should never have attacked and occupied Afghanistan. It was wrong, it was illegal, and I think it was immoral. The war may end for the United States, but the war will intensify for Afghanistan unless something must be done, and that is that we need to constitute a UN peacekeeping force immediately.
There are no plans yet for UN peacekeepers, and a central demand of the Taliban in the ongoing peace negotiations is a complete withdrawal of foreign forces by May 1st, the date set by President Trump. Biden's delayed troop withdrawal may start then, but will it be as complete as promised?
This does not include the thousands of men and women who are part of U.S. Special Operation and NATO Special Operation teams, CIA teams, as well as the, literally dozens of squadrons of attack aircraft and bombers, whether they be manned or droned, that are in the area.
That's Matthew Ho speaking on the Democracy Now! NewsHour. He's a senior fellow at the Center for International Policy. He was a Marine in the occupation of Iraq, followed by a State Department position in Afghanistan. He resigned in 2009 in protest of President Obama's escalation of the war.
The potential for the United States to remain involved militarily is quite high, even if all 3,500 acknowledged U.S. troops are withdrawn, as well as the NATO troops. The devastation on the Afghan people is hard to imagine. That 2.5 million refugees are what's registered right now. But there have been millions and millions of refugees for the last 40 years. For most of these last 40 years, the Afghans have been the largest refugee population in the world, with the exception of a period of time when the Syrians were. But as the Syrians go back, as that war has wound down, the Afghans, I believe, are once again the largest refugee population in the world. It's something like 70% of Afghans subsist on a dollar a day. There is no industry in Afghanistan to speak of.
The most recent estimate of the financial cost to the United States of the war in Afghanistan over the past 20 years from Brown University's Cost of War Project is $2.3 trillion, which could have built a lot of infrastructure in both Afghanistan and in the United States. Instead, the U.S. bought weapons, built soon-to-be-abandoned bases, and endlessly cycled troops through repeated deployments. Care for injured veterans and debt on the money borrowed to wage war will continue to cost U.S. taxpayers for decades to come. This doesn't count the billions spent arming the Afghan Mujahideen to fight the invading Soviet army during the 1980s, arms and training turned against the United States and its allies decades later. On September 14, 2001, days after the Al-Qaeda attacks on the U.S., California Congresswoman Barbara Lee spoke on the House floor opposing military action against Afghanistan.
Now, I have agonized over this vote, but I came to grips with it today, and I came to grips with opposing this resolution during the very painful yet very beautiful memorial service. As a member of the clergy so eloquently said, as we act, let us not become the evil that we deplore.
Congressmember Lee gave that speech just before casting the lone vote against the Authorization for Use of Military Force, or AUMF, which remains in effect to this day. This week, Lee applauded Biden's announced troop withdrawal, adding, "This is the result of decades of hard work by activists, advocates, and members of Congress committed to ending our forever wars. We must utilize this momentum to rein in executive war powers and put that power back in the hands of Congress and the people," she said. Lee is also leading a group of 50 House members who sent a letter to President Biden urging him to slash the Pentagon budget. She said in a statement, "As we face a global pandemic and unprecedented economic crisis, the needs of American families far outweigh the need to continue feeding our bloated military defense budget." California Congressmember Ro Khanna, a co-signer of the letter, spoke on the Democracy Now! NewsHour.
If you're ending the forever war in Afghanistan, as the president pointed out, that should save about $50 billion a year. Then why are we increasing at the same time the defense budget? We need to look at where the numbers are being allocated and have a strategic reduction and allocate that instead in the threats that the United States faces, potential pandemics, climate change, cybersecurity.
Ending the war in Afghanistan should be a beginning, accompanied immediately by reparations to the Afghan people. President Biden should also end U.S. military interventions elsewhere, starting with Iraq, and cut the military budget. After decades of war, let's give peace a chance. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
One speeding ticket, Columbia County.
Columbia County, everybody gets speeding tickets. How else do they pay for the roads to get plowed in the winter?
And now, here is your WGXE weather update. On Saturday, partly sunny with a high near 53 degrees. Saturday night, mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 38. And on Sunday, a slight chance of showers after 2 p.m. It will be partly sunny with a high near 58 degrees. And on Sunday night, partly cloudy with a low of around 39 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXE, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears. In Greene and the Columbia counties.
That was Tim Hecker with the song I'm Transmitting Tonight from his 2017 album Radio Amor.
You have the already global networks. So my argument is very simple. The present media is too large and wasteful. From now on, we should think about the more smaller media to diverse our culture and community. I have different idea on airwave. Airwave belong to the every people, everybody, not to the states or a government. Okay, I will make the transmitter now. Station. Telephone number is 212-420-9045.
Pedimos que por favor reporten al 420-9045. Estamos midiendo la fuerza de esta transmisión, una nueva emisora.
This is great.
Let's but I have one of the VHS
independent narrowcasting.
Less than it costs to buy a little good radio.
This is WNYU too. We're actually going over a really powerful station.
Really? Right? We're going over NYU?
Yeah, so if you can imagine, if we go on a space that's not being used, we can go even further.
Yeah. Not that there are a lot in New York. But keep yours close to the mic. Guys know what's called. We're really getting a lot of reach and a lot of distance. Nobody lives around here, that's the thing. Tell me if I'm going to bump into these guys. That's not them, is it?
This is Radio Cobra Tiger signing off.